Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bell's Quest by Eve Longley, narrated by Sierra Klein. Prologue. Agatha, aka Fairy Godmother, left the ball hosted in honor of the Corsican Prince, quite pleased with how things had turned out. She'd managed to put another cursed grim story back in the book where it belonged. But it hadn't been easy. It took much to counter the Grim Effect's attempts to force Cinder and Prince Killian to marry. The curse kept trying to force the issue, even as it became quickly obvious Cinder had feelings for another. It hadn't been easy getting the reluctant knight Levi to admit he loved Cinder. But now, the pair were married, and quite romantically, too. When faced with possible death, or marrying the prince, Cinder eschewed her safety and chose true love. With Cinderella having foiled the Grim Effect quite spectacularly, the little Ash story returned to being just fiction. However, too many stories remained at large, with more being added. See, the Grim Effect reenacted its own perverse version of the stories it had absorbed since its arrival from space. Yes, space. A tiny little rock that Agatha had plucked from her garden, never realizing what she'd unleash. Agatha glared at the side table in her study, piled with books, a stack that had grown despite ridding her home of literature. The villagers kept popping by while she was forced to do her godmotherly duties, although the true blame belonged to the alien stone at the heart of all their problems. It kept finding ways to add to its cursed magic. The latest edition, a compilation of Mother Goose's rhymes. Only the image on the cover remained to identify the tome that sat atop the pile, the pages in it blank, as the old lyrical poems were set loose on the world.
"Naughty stone, you've been busy while I was gone."
She shook her finger at it, but, of course, received no reply.
"You shouldn't be working against me,"
the monotone voice startled. Agatha just about fell over, whipping around to see the strangest sight, which said a lot considering the things she'd observed since the stone's arrival. A figure stood by the bookcase, not human, not even alive. The papier-mâché simulacrum of a person crossed its arms as it stared at her. Or so she assumed. Hard to tell since it lacked eyes.
"Who are you?" she exclaimed. "What are you doing in my home?"
"I am here because that is where my kernel of existence landed. I am known on your world as Methuselah."
"As in Methuselah from the Bible? Or Methuselah the star?"
"Neither. Your astronomers have long since miscategorized my existence," it corrected. "The only thing they got correct was my galactic origin."
"So, not a star, but an alien."
A chill went through her at the realization the tiny meteor she'd found in her garden was even more than she suspected.
"But that makes no sense. Rocks aren't alive."
"There are many kinds of existence, the flesh-based version being the most basic."
"Basic? And yet you made yourself a golem in our image," she pointed out.
"Because it seemed the most practical shape. And I am not a simple golem. Those are usually mindless puppets, whereas I am sentient. This,"
it waved a hand at its body,
"is merely a temporary container for my spirit."
"And why do you need a container?"
Up until now, this so-called Methuselah had been screwing over the world just fine without hands.
"That I might further my goals. It took longer than expected to gather the needed energy to create a vessel that could communicate. But I have plans to upgrade."
That sounded ominous.
"I'm not sure I understand why you need a body. You've been meddling for decades without one."
She couldn't help that sour observation.
"Because it is time for the next step in my conquest."
The thing cocked its head, and she'd have sworn it sounded amused when it said,
Did you think I wouldn't notice you trying to thwart me?
Rather than deny, she lifted her chin.
Can you blame me? You're ruining my planet.
Ruining it how?
You're forcing people to act out perverted versions of fairy tales.
The grim stories could be dark enough without the alien rock twisting them into a curse.
I don't see the problem.
Do you even care? You're ruining lives, she blurted out.
No.
So what is your end goal?
Because she couldn't see it.
To feed, until I regain my former glory. I used to be known as the Devourer of Worlds until I ran out of sentient planets. I spent an eternity starving, shrinking into almost nothing. I thought I might expire until I heard your planet crying out.
You're here to destroy us, she dully remarked.
Hardly destroy. I've learned from my past mistakes. Absolute destruction leads to starvation. Therefore, I shall preserve your planet, that it might feed me and make me strong enough to seek out new worlds.
The monotone delivery of its manifesto made it all the more chilling.
When you say feed, you don't mean actually eating people, though.
The paper body tilted its head, and the face crinkled as if it tried to smile.
Nothing so messy. I seek energy. The more chaotic and emotionally charged, the better. What luck humanity has so many different stories that give me exactly what I need.
You don't need to curse people for chaos. Our world is already a boiling pot of emotions.
I can only feed from those that I've linked to what you term the Grimm Effect.
Which explained so much. Except for one thing.
Why were you trying to keep Cinder and Levi apart? I would think that their love would have been a boost if you like emotions so much.
The head definitely grimaced, quite a feat since it lacked an actual face.
True love is anathema to turmoil and destruction. It is stronger than my compulsion, poison to my plan.
It sounded dumb. And yet had it just admitted love could defeat this alien invader? As if it read her mind, the paper body took a step toward her and murmured,
Don't think I haven't seen you thwarting my storylines. You cannot win.
Don't be so sure of that.
She aimed her wand and lit the paper golem on fire. Chapter 1 My first time meeting a prince didn't go so well. I'd been sent to the airport to escort the royal flying in from Corsica, an independent island off the coast of France. I and a team of Grim Knights, a.k.a. super agents for the Fairy Tale Bureau who brought the swords and guns to the fight against curses, waited in the baggage claim area since even our badges couldn't get us past the security checkpoint. Blame the recent fiasco caused by a witch who was peeved an airplane cut off her broom's flight path. She went on a rampage in the airport terminal, turning people into toads. Since then, security had tightened, hence why we waited for the prince, much to the knight's annoyance, since they took their new mission of protection seriously. I didn't really worry, because I knew the prince was arriving with his own set of bodyguards. As for His Royal Highness, I didn't know much about him other than his name, not having had time to peruse the file sent to me by my boss, Hilda. The blame for my lack of preparation rested squarely on the three little pigs who'd run me ragged the night before. I'd been tracking them to try to offer protection from the big bad wolf determined to eat them. Given how they kept slipping away, I had to wonder if perhaps they might be better off taking care of themselves. The night before my trek to the airport, I'd been hot on their curly tails when they entered the downtown night market. I lost track of them in the crush of bodies gathered in front of a temporary stage, where some woman in a golden cage sang for a rapt audience. You'd think three pigs would be easy to spot with their pink skin and tubby bodies. Wrong. The slippery jerks went scooting between people's legs, and let's just say, when I tried to follow, there was much objection. Still, I tried to find them, and when they eluded me once again, I took my disappointment out on some pulled pork. Savage? Yup. I was okay with it. My patience only went so far, and in my defense, the pork melted in my mouth and made my taste buds sing. Anyhow, after that failure, rather than lose more sleep reading a boring file, I slept in as late as I dared before heading to the airport to greet His Majesty. While the knights watched the perimeter around the baggage claim area, I yawned. Apparently, the prince, despite having access to a private jet, chose to fly commercial. Lovely. One of those out-of-touch entitled pricks who liked to think he was a man of the people. According to the arrivals board, the plane had landed without mishap, and people were clearing customs. As passengers began to exit the glass doors, stiff-legged and weary-looking from the long flight, I kept an eye out for a dude with an armed escort. Ping! My phone chirped, and I glanced to see a message from Hilda.
Prince's bodyguards being detained by security for bringing weapons through customs. I'm on the phone yelling at them right now.
I'll bet she was. Hilda didn't have patience for incompetence, and someone too big for their britches deciding to cause a diplomatic incident would be enough to push her over the edge. As the people emerging tapered, and the luggage came down to just a few pieces, which were expensive-looking and emblazoned with the Corsican royal emblem, a scruffy dude appeared and sauntered over to the conveyor. I frowned, but didn't start moving until the guy reached down to grab one of the royal suitcases. Holy brazen! Stealing right in front of me! I didn't stop to think, or even warn. I went into action mode, sprinting the few yards separating us and tackling the guy as he gripped the handle of the luggage. Thump! We hit the floor hard. Well, he did. I landed on top, snarling, "I don't think so!" The pretty man with shaggy blonde hair and brilliant eyes blinked at me.
Hello?
Don't hello me, thief, I snarled. His lips curved.
I assure you, I wasn't stealing.
I highly doubt that suitcase belongs to you, Myra posed, as a knight finally arrived to render me aid. Hannah, a tall, svelte woman with her hair drawn back into a fat braid, hissed, Belle. What the fuck are you doing tackling the prince? The prince? My turn to blink. This is Prince Killian? Excuse my incredulity. The guy I had pinned to the floor wore a very worn pair of jeans with holes and a t-shirt washed so many times the image on the front had faded. He had the nerve to grin.
That would be me. And you are?
Feeling pretty dumb, I grumbled before adding, I'm Agent Boucher.
A pleasure to meet you, Agent Boucher.
I doubt that, I muttered as I rose from the prince, who kept an amused expression. Hannah hauled the man to his feet and apologized, of sorts. Excuse my colleague, Your Highness. She obviously didn't have enough coffee this morning.
No harm done, the prince magnanimously stated.
Why are you walking around without your security detail? I couldn't help a suspicious note. The prince supposedly needed protection, having left Corsica with two bodyguards and been assigned knights while he visited, and yet here he was, wandering around all la-di-da. The prince jerked a thumb at the glass doors.
They're still working on reclaiming the weapons the customs people confiscated.
And you didn't wait for them?
He shrugged. I was hungry.
My lips pursed. They're for your protection.
So my mother claims, he grimaced. I find them rather intrusive, especially since no one wants to kill me.
You're an unmarried prince. You're always in danger. In this world, post-Grim Effect, eligible royals were few. The fairy tale curses being reenacted ensured they either got married, were transformed into a frog, or worse.
I would give away my rank if I could. Alas, I am my mother's only heir, and so I must suffer the hordes of women who want to become my wife.
How horrifying, I drawled.
It is, he agreed. Do you know how hard it is to weed those with genuine interest from those magically convinced they love me?
Poor prince, I taunted. It appeared I couldn't stop myself from being sassy. What could I say? Something about him set me off. It might have been his good looks, his cool, slightly amused composure, or the fact I'd fucked up by laying hands on the person I was supposed to watch out for. Hilda would be pissed, meaning I'd most likely be assigned something worse than chasing pigs.
Your Highness, we have a vehicle waiting to take you to your hotel, Hannah stated, and I was told to inform you that the preparations for the ball are well in hand.
Ball? I snickered. Going to find yourself a Cinderella? My mouth ran faster than my brain. The remark pursed his lips.
I should hope not. I have no interest in marrying someone who thinks losing a shoe makes her the perfect wife. The ball was my mother's idea, seeing as how I'll be celebrating my 40th birthday while conducting business.
40 and single? Impressive. Most princes barely made it out of their teens before they were locked down.
Here come your guards, Hannah announced, as two scowling and burly fellows exited, with the bearded one barking,
Your Highness, you were told to wait with us.
I'm fine, the prince waved a hand. My backup security detail has already tackled the job.
Was that a dig?
Shall we go?
Hannah led the way to the vehicles parked outside, but I didn't ride with the prince. I had my own car here, and as I followed, my phone rang. Uh-oh. Hilda. I answered with a cheery, Hey, boss!
Don't you hey me. Did you seriously rough up the prince?
Hardly roughed up.
You had him pinned to the floor, her dry reply.
In my defense, he looked like a vagrant.
How could you not recognize him? His picture was in the file, she screeched.
I didn't have time to read it over.
The growling went on for a few seconds before Hilda snapped. I don't need this today. I'm already short-staffed as it is, and now I need to assign someone else to the prince.
Why? Did he complain? Pussy? Couldn't handle a strong woman and a few bruises?
No, he didn't. But for the sake of diplomatic relations, I think it's best someone else act as liaison.
If you insist. I didn't really care.
Babysitting a grown-ass man sounded boring.
What do you want me doing instead?
You can find those darned pigs, she commanded, before hanging up.
Oh, I'd find them all right. And if they caused any trouble, they'd be bacon.
Chapter 2 After much chasing and a slog through some mud, I did in fact catch the pigs the day after the incident with the prince. Despite their squealing, oinking, and farting, oh my god, the farting, I got them to understand I was trying to protect them. Once I promised the pigs all the scraps they could eat, they accompanied me to the fairy tale bureau, where someone would place them in protective custody. As for the wolf, we currently had a knight hunting him down. Since I wore a layer of mud head to toe, I chose to head out. But I hadn't quite escaped the building when the prince entered with his entourage. He looked the same as before, albeit wearing a different shirt, still very handsome, while I looked like I'd crawled from the sewer. I tried to avoid his eye and keep my head turned as I passed, but he recognized me.
Agent Boucher, how nice to see you again.
Damn him for sounding so cheerful. I slewed a dark gaze his way and couldn't help saying,
I take it your tushy wasn't bruised from our meeting yesterday.
He smiled wide enough to show perfect pearly whites.
Not one bit. Would you like to take a peek, to be sure?
I'll take your word for it, I muttered.
Guess that means no kisses for my boo-boo.
I arched a brow.
I wouldn't advise it, as I've been known to bite.
A deep belly laugh emerged from him, kind of contagious.
had to admire a man who could dish it and take it.
I was dismayed to hear you wouldn't be acting as my liaison, he stated. And here I thought we'd gotten off to a smashing start.
Why, Your Highness, your file didn't mention your penchant for masochism. Once more, he chuckled.
Then they must have omitted quite a bit, seeing as how I am always getting into scrapes, much to my mother's chagrin.
How cute you admit to being a mama's boy. Most men have cut the apron strings by your age. Rather than take offense, he quipped.
What can I say? A bond between mother and son is precious.
Did nothing get under this man's skin? And why was I so determined to rattle him?
Well, I shouldn't keep you. I'm sure you have important princely things to do.
If by important you mean avoiding the Cinderellas clustering outside my hotel.
He finally showed a hint of a frown.
Poor little prince has a fan club, I cooed. Count yourself lucky. My suitors usually have fangs.
With that remark, I left. Let him wonder what I meant. I wasn't about to explain that it happened quite literally, and I couldn't date because of it.
See, as a young girl, my father inadvertently caused me to be cursed. He traveled quite a bit as a renowned antiquarian, which, for the people about to hunt up a dictionary, was a person who studied really old books. He had access to collections few could imagine. One in particular, owned by a reclusive gent, included a first edition of Alice in Wonderland, a favorite story of mine, although it should be noted, as a teenager, I preferred the movie, not the literary version. But my dad, in his excitement, borrowed it to show me, just one night. But its disappearance was noticed. The owner of said book had a beastly fit. To prevent being charged with theft, my father agreed to have me live with the gent as a companion. Not a sex slave, for the pervs who assumed wrong. My task was to read to the owner of the library. Julio, a man in his late 20s, had, almost a decade before, refused to offer succor to an old woman for a night. That old woman turned out to be a witch, and she cursed Julio. He became a beast who roared and snapped and growled unless someone read to him. Surprisingly enough, living with Julio didn't prove to be too bad. I lived in a mansion with servants to cater to my needs. I ate very well, had fine clothes, even tutors to ensure I graduated high school with honors. The problem arose when I turned 18, and Julio asked me to cure his curse. By this point, I'd already become familiar with the Beauty and the Beast storyline, which was one of the few fairy tales not from the original Brothers Grimm books. It didn't start appearing until a decade after the other curses started. Knowing the story, I had to tell poor Julio, whom I'd grown fond of, that, alas, I didn't love him. I mean, the guy was more than a decade older than me, and quite honestly, while nice to me, he could be an ass to others.
He didn't take the rejection well, and chose to advise me that his curse didn't require an emotional connection, but a physical one with a virgin.
I won't horrify with details, except to say he attempted to take me by force, while in beast form, and failed. The heavy book I smashed him with left him stunned long enough for me to flee. When he chased me down the street, running on four paws and roaring, a car running a red light took him out. I'd have felt sadder if it hadn't freed me from the deal he'd made with my father. Given I'd escaped my curse, albeit under troubling circumstances, the academy that trained the Fairy Tale Bureau agents recruited me. I'd managed to evade the curse without side effects, and was considered one of the lucky ones. Debatable, seeing as how I remained a technical virgin in my 30s, because every time I got romantically involved with someone, they turned into a beast. Every single time. It got so that I didn't even bother going on dates anymore. How could I, when I knew what would happen? We get to know one another, things would progress to where he'd lean in for a kiss, and wham! Fur, fangs, and growling. Since love appeared out of reach, I turned to work and books, to my father's delight, until he passed a few years ago. I lived vicariously through the romances of others, read of adventures that took heroines to faraway places in search of treasures and cures to curses. Wished I could be like them. Alas, I didn't have the resources to go gallivanting on quests. Heck, I barely made enough to pay the mortgage and support my book addiction. As I arrived home, mud flaking from me with every step, I eyed the rundown house I'd purchased for a song. Triple murders had a way of devaluing property. Worked for me. I needed a place with lots of rooms for my books. I entered to their musty scent. Old and new, they lined the walls from the moment you walked in. The bookcases, which I built out of simple pine that I stained, held them neatly in lined rows. Alphabetical by author. Some of them quite rare. All of them read. I didn't hoard books just to own them. I devoured each and every page. Tonight, though, rather than bury myself in the pages of the newest murder mystery I'd bought, I headed for the turret chamber, a rounded room on the corner of the house that had the least number of books because the walls that didn't have windows held maps instead. A chart of the world, with pins that I'd been using to mark where the first instance of each Grim Effect story reenactment began. I'd color-coded them to differentiate the newer cases from the older, green being the oldest confirmed cases. To my surprise, once I started digging, the green pins clustered only in England. Also interesting, that British Isle had the most confirmed cases. It hadn't started appearing in North America until a decade later. Europe happened sooner, seeing their first cursed story was within 3 years of the earliest cases documented. You must be wondering why I researched this particular fact. Simple, really. I wanted to put an end to the curses. I wouldn't be the first to try, though. Over the decades since the stories came to life, others had studied the Grim Effect. Each and every one of them had been taken out by the curse they sought to eradicate. Professor Sims wrote papers on the Grim Effect, hypothesizing that pollution had led to magical side effects. He died when attacked by a flock of swans. There was an investigative news reporter, Ella something or other. She'd done several pieces outlining the Grim Effect and how people could protect themselves. She'd been about to depart on a trip to look for the curse origin when got pushed off a rooftop terrace by a murder of crows. There'd been other incidences of people showing too much curiosity. It led to most being leery of investigating the Grim Effect. Not me. I had nothing to lose. Since I couldn't bring myself to have sex with a beast, my lonely existence stretched before me. I had to do something if I didn't want to be alone forever. Yes, I had friends. Yes, I enjoyed my job, and I loved my books. But there were times at night, alone in bed, when I really wished I had someone by my side. Someone to hold me. Someone to hug me. Someone to give me an orgasm that wasn't finger or battery induced. Blame my horny desire for human touch for my driving determination to solve the Grim Effect mystery. Soon, I'd be heading over the big pond to visit a small town where the first case was supposedly reported. I'd been saving up, but not easily. Books tempted me around every corner. I stood in front of the map and tapped my bottom lip. It had been interesting to note that the first curses definitely originated from the Brothers Grimm stories. Then, about a decade later, we'd begun to see new stories, as well as adaptations of the current reenactments. Then things were steady for a while, for lack of a better term, until recently. Of late, we'd been seeing more fairy tales, and even nursery rhymes coming to life. The Grim Effect had expanded. But why? And how did it choose its stories? I found it odd that it stuck to fairy tales for the most part. Why not horror novels, or even epic fantasy? Not to say I wanted It by Stephen King to become reality, or for The Lord of the Rings to turn part of the planet into Mordor. But it seemed strange to me the choice of stories being reenacted over and over around the world. More worrisome, we'd been seeing the curses get darker, more violent. For example, recently...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?